special success.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Just very appreciative of everybody tuning in on this, the day of the wedding of the Antichrist. No, I'm just joking. No, I'm not actually joking. Mate, seriously, last night, TV3, TV1, and to a lesser extent, TV2, all had unscheduled programming, for the fabulous royal wedding. You know, it's like there's total saturation. And there's a lot of things I want to say about it, most of which I can't say under FCC regulations, but it just really, really, it upset me. Not only because these people who were down there and all of that were getting interviewed by these, you know, random wandering around dipshite Muslim reporters who are all dressed up very nicely and going, "Hey, what did you think about the wedding? Wasn't it fantastic?" And they go, "Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, the dress was fantastic. I mean, they said the word fantastic at least 700 times over the course of the wedding that I was watching. It's like the catch-all phrase of weddings in the blue blood sense of the word." It just frustrated the living hell out of me. But it illustrated a very important point. Yes, it did. That anybody who's a royalist doesn't have a very big vocabulary, which is probably an indication that they're not terribly bright either, which I would expect. Because if you are a royalist, you don't realise that the royals are a bunch of frickin' scum who don't give two flying F's about you or your family or your nation's sovereignty. After all, they're the ones who are sovereign and they don't want to share it. Okay? There is only one Lord of the Ring and he does not share power. Incidentally, now we have a Dutch and Duchess of the Ring. Isn't that fabulous? You know, quite frankly, and it really just ticks me off as well, inexorably, because they arrested Charlie Veach and a bunch of other activists who were planning to disrupt the funeral, and that was what I was watching the funeral to see if somebody had the guts to stand up and protest in the middle of all these flag-waving retards. But there was nobody! All the media coverage was controlled. Everything was extremely well organized, with thousands upon thousands of players in this big charade. Wouldn't it be nice to have a wedding like that one day? Maybe if I want to destroy an empire. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Jamming a big monkey wrench into the gears of the suppressive state. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, broadcasting live from the future from the fabulous island chain nation of New Zealand. My very special guest this evening for everybody, it's my esteemed pleasure to bring another Kiwi collaborator onto the airwaves for the first time. His name is Matthew, and I'm not sure if you want me to disclose your full name, mate, because basically, ladies and gentlemen, he has experienced what it's like to support somebody who's under the who's been thrown under the bus of the state somewhat, and then wound up getting deported. Those of you who listen to the show regularly know that last week we interviewed Muad'Dib, the filmmaker who made the breakthrough film 7/7 Ripple Effect, which exposes hand over silk fist, that 7/7 was an inside job, much like the British version of 9/11. And Matthew joins us now from New Zealand. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's always a pleasure to have new people on air here with me. One thing I'd really love you to do, just to sort of preface this conversation we're about to have, is explain who you are and basically just a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, my name is Matthew. I've been a friend, supporter and student of Muad'Dib for a number of years. For anyone who doesn't know, Muad'Dib is the maker of the documentary film 7/7 Ripple Effect, which calls into question the official account of events surrounding the London tube trains and bus bombings of July 7th, 2005. I've been studying and supporting him over in Europe for a number of years, and when I heard he'd been arrested in Ireland and was facing the extradition to the UK to face the ludicrous charge of seeking to pervert the course of justice, which carries a possible life sentence, simply for sending copies of his film, The 7/7 Ripple Effect, to a UK courthouse, I travelled by boat from where I was currently living at the time, in the Netherlands, to Ireland to support him. That was in mid-2009, after he was arrested earlier that year for sending copies of his film to the courts in 2008, as he explained to you, Vinny, when he appeared on your show last Wednesday. When I arrived in Ireland, he was fighting the extradition and was awaiting a Supreme Court hearing in which he was appealing the extradition order. That Irish Supreme Court hearing was scheduled for the 11th of November 2010 at 11 o'clock in the morning, which was the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, which is Armistice Day in the UK and is the British equivalent of our Anzac Day here in New Zealand, which is on subject because we only just observed Anzac Day here in New Zealand earlier this week on the 25th of April.
Yeah, I've got a few different takes on Anzac Day. I mean, if we're going to remember the dead, let's remember the truth, that they were lied to and they were used as pawns and died so that international bankers who instigated all these wars could profit from it, you know?
Yeah.
I will remember the dead much longer than somebody else who thinks that they died for freedom, because I know the truth. And yeah. I think it's actually a time for remembrance to be angry and to not sit back and let their name be basically taken in vain and lied about, because it just doesn't do justice to their memory, I don't think.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the way I see it is, and the way I remember it, is it's a day to remember those who fought and gave their lives to protect us against tyranny. I mean, that's the ideal, even though, you know, they were lied to and were used as pawns in wars for imperial gain. But and remembering it for what it should be in an ideal world is, you know, to fight against tyranny and to pay the ultimate price for that. And it is that tyranny that Muad'Dib is fighting against now. But this time the tyrants, well, as last time, the tyrants are within our own governments and also presiding over them.
With the UK here, I mean, it's more security cameras than any other country on earth per capita. As far as I know, people are photographed like 100-something times, and this royal wedding and the raids that happened the day before, everybody who was planning to do a thing called freedom of speech was raided and arrested the day before, so that the royals wouldn't have their festivities rudely interrupted. Instead, they just rudely interrupted everybody else's festivities, didn't they? And it just makes me sick, you know. And
it's really the UK has become a very paranoid state. Now, it's just incredible the amount of police control that happens there, not just in special events like, you know, what's just happened over there, but all the time, you know, where everyone is treated like a criminal. And the population is taught to look at each other as if they're potential criminals. I mean, while we were over there, we were, you know, handing out copies of DVDs of Mordeeb's film, The 7-7 Ripple Effect, to people, and, you know, trying to spread the word about it. And people would look at us suspiciously just for doing that, you know, and we were actually reported to the authorities by people, you know, the public, for doing that. It's like people have been programmed to be wary of anyone who doesn't think according to the official line, so to speak.
Well, it seems to me that more often than not, the official line is just a story. And the reality is a secret.
Yeah, it's a fairy tale story. Where we're told to be, told to be afraid of anything that's not completely according to their agenda.
I mean, and that's acting under the assumption, of course, and that official sources are reliable sources. And in my opinion, official sources haven't been reliable for quite some time, to the extent possible, saying possibly they might not have been credible ever. And that's pure speculation on my part. I'm sure that the government does occasionally tell you things that are the truth. However, it's not the important stuff that they tell you the truth about.
No. If they tell you the truth, it's probably means someone slipped up somewhere.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Port Authority worker who let it slip that a nuclear device had come through a US port, and then the reporter goes, what? and the authority worker goes, I'll just direct you to Homeland Security. Homeland Security sends the reporter a letter. He was just talking out of his ass, you know. That wasn't the truth at all.
No.
You know, and it's like you say, accidentally letting the truth slip is, the most likely way that we'll ever get the truth out of these people.
That's right.
And it's few and far between, because they do keep somewhat of a tight noose on the topic. And this is the thing about 7-7 Ripple Effect that I found particularly interesting, is that merely to provide evidence in any way, shape, or form that the government was culpable in the attacks is now an indictable, arrestable, and jailable offence. Getting evidence out to the public or to those who are having people on trial who are, for all accounts, most likely innocent of the crimes that they're being charged with, is now a crime in itself.
Yeah, or being a supporter of someone who's doing that, you know, like what happened to us, just for supporting someone who is standing up and asking questions. You know, we were treated like criminals.
Well, specifically, I mean, what exactly happened? I mean, you went to England, you were passing out DVDs, and what?
I'll come to that later. I'll sort of, if you don't mind, I'd like to continue telling the people about Mordeeb's court appeal in Ireland before.
Absolutely, go
across to the UK, please.
Absolutely, go right ahead. Let's start off with the Emerald Isle.
Yeah, so he was in Ireland appealing the extradition to the UK. He prepared submissions to the court at his Irish Supreme Court appeal hearing, which contained 54 valid legal points demonstrating how the extradition was unjust, illegal under the Irish Constitution, the European Arrest Warrant Act of 2003, and it was also unlawful under God's law. Nevertheless, the three judges at his appeal hearing at the Supreme Court in Ireland decided to carry the extradition, and he was taken into custody and extradited to the UK a few days later. That verdict proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that no court in all the land, not even in supposedly independent states like the Republic of Ireland, that the Irish fought and died for over 700 years to win independence from the British monarchy, is really free from UK crown control. If the Irish Republic was truly free from British crown control, the extradition would not have been carried because it was against the Irish Constitution on a number of points. But all judges and barristers in Ireland and throughout the Western world are members of the Bar, which is an acronym and means the British Accreditation Registry, which originated in Temple Bar in the City of London, and it serves the British Crown. So all lawyers and judges throughout the Western world serve the British Crown, and by extension, those Western nations are controlled through their respective judiciaries by the British Crown. So after Mordeeb was extradited to the UK, myself and a fellow supporter of Mordeeb from another Commonwealth nation, South Africa, set off in my New Zealand flagged boat for the UK to follow his case and support him there. Unfortunately, we were not welcomed in the UK, and after a series of events, we were physically removed off the boat and deported to our respective countries of origin, being told that we had no legal right under their legislation to be in the country. Our deportation should never have happened and was an outright abuse of police and powers, and it happened for political motivations. How this happened was we travelled across from Ireland across the Irish Sea.
Your microphone seems to be scratching a little bit there. You might want to take it a little bit further away from your mouth.
Okay. Is that better, Vinny?
That's much better. Continue on, please.
Yeah, how this happened was we travelled across the Irish Sea to England, and then we sort of coast hopped, sailing around the coast on our way to London. And when we arrived to London, we were told that we should have checked into immigration at the first touch of land in the UK, which was, for us, it was a remote bird sanctuary island in the Bristol Channel, and it was just impractical to have done that. So the authorities told us to, suggested us to depart the UK across to Europe, and then re-enter the country, and upon re-entering, to approach immigration within 24 hours. And that we did. In the meantime, while we were travelling around, we had been handing out DVDs and leaflets, to support Mordeeb, which we thought was, just a normal thing to do, like to anyone who's interested in hearing about the case. So we travelled across to Europe, across to the Netherlands, and then we travelled south, down the French and Belgian coasts and then came back across to England on the south coast. And we did what we were told. We contacted the authorities as soon as we arrived. But we asked to speak to immigration. But because we were obviously already known and expected by the British authorities, immigration weren't the people who first came to us. We were greeted by the special branch anti-terrorist squad of the police who separated the two of us and interviewed us under Schedule 7 of their anti-terrorist legislation, which is basically you have no fundamental rights. You're obligated under this legislation to answer all questions. You have no right to remain silent. It's just a total abuse of policing power.
So let me get this straight. They stage a terror attack, pass legislation to suppress everybody's rights, and then when people call them on the fact that they staged the terror attack, they use the legislation they passed to suppress their rights.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, that's really positive, isn't it, for democracy and individual sovereignty and any description of discourse of freedom, isn't it? There doesn't seem to be a lot of thought on the part of the general public as to how many of their rights are being usurped and just how quickly it's happening too. And that's my main concern of recent years, is that it just seems to be accelerating. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, it's out of control.
And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Matthew, one of Muad'Dib's supporters here in New Zealand. And we'll be right back just after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Join us in the chat room there, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there if you dare, and also check out GorillaMedia.co.nz for all the fabulous articles that our contributors have been popping in, including yesterday's interview with the famous Steve Quayle, which is now uploaded to YouTube, and that's the top story at GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. My very special guest today, our Kiwi collaborator, is Matthew from New Zealand, and he was deported from the UK as a result of his public support for Muad'Dib, who's trying to expose the 7/7 tube bombings as a government-instigated self-inflicted wound. Matthew, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny. I was just talking about how we were deported, how we were getting the runaround by the authorities, being interviewed by the anti-terrorist police. And then, the anti-terrorist police asked us all kinds of questions and finally concluded that we were peaceful people, which we are. We're just we're just sharing our beliefs with people.
What made them suspect that you were dangerous people when you were handing out DVDs?
Well, it's...
Because You know, when I see people handing out DVDs, you know, I hold my girlfriend's hand a lot tighter and snuggle her closer into me as we walk past these very dangerous individuals with their discs made of plastic, because they're almost as dangerous as Tron characters as far as I understand it.
Yeah, well, to these people. To the instigators of the system and these anti-terrorist police and all the rest, you have to remember are only foot soldiers. They're just people like you and I who have been misled, deceived, and they believe, genuinely believe that they're doing the right thing. And they've got wives and families themselves, and, you know, they're just trying to earn a living. So... but they're acting under orders. They have to do what they're told from above. So, yeah, that they were obviously ordered from above to interview us.
Well, that's one of the things I'd like to make a point on here, is that they call themselves anti-terrorist, when if you have a look at the definition of terrorism, one of them is it's a method of governing people. So the reality is that anti-terrorism forces are in fact terrorism forces, and they are there to govern you in a terrifying way.
Yeah, so... Anyway, we spoke with, in the interview, with these anti-terrorist police, and they actually ended up being supportive and shaking our hands and wishing us all the best. Unofficially after the interview was over, but, you know, they took notes and they sent the notes that they took to the higher echelons who are the ones that say what's what and what happens. So, the normal thing that should have happened, if a foreign flag vessel like ourselves enters a nation's territorial waters and is denied leave to enter the nation, is that it's turned away at the port and given a set time period in which to leave that nation's waters. And that would have been the quickest and most efficient way to deport me, a New Zealand citizen, to New Zealand territory, as the boat itself is New Zealand territory when it's in international waters, like when it's outside the territorial waters of the UK. So, yeah, all they needed to do was say, get on your boat and leave. But in our case, because of the political motivations that were at work, we were physically removed from our home and all our worldly possessions, the boat, and have been sent across to the other side of the world from it with only the clothes we were wearing and an attempt to cripple us and prevent any, or at least minimise, support for Mordeeb at his trial. It hasn't only happened to us. Other supporters of Mordeeb have also been harassed by police and other authorities, and another has also been deported back to the USA in a similar way. So the question begs to be asked, why are the authorities so afraid of Mordeeb and trying to minimise public support for him at his trial?
It's criminology.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say it's like criminology 101. If you pull somebody over on the side of the road and they start acting erratic and trying to say, don't look in the boot, don't look in the back seat, you know, then you instantly have to say, okay, well, they've probably done something wrong. That's probable cause. Let's go do something. So when the state actively goes around suppressing people who are criticising the state, then it seems pretty obvious that they're acting in a criminal manner. And so therefore, it makes it even more suspicious than originally, if that's even possible.
Yes, yeah. Well, beside the fact that 7/7 ripple effect tells the truth, that the London 7/7 bombings couldn't possibly have been carried out by the four alleged Muslim suicide bombers who were blamed for the attacks, and besides the fact that the judge and prosecuting barrister lied to the jury in the trial of the three friends of the original four alleged bombers that Mordeeb sent copies of his film to the court in the trial of, and an attempt to prevent that provision of the course of justice by the UK authorities from happening, The real reason the authorities are so afraid and are working so hard to keep everything quiet and out of the public eye is because of the unique way Mordib is defending himself at his trial. Mordib has challenged the authority and jurisdiction of the Crown to bring charges against him based upon the evidence he has, which firstly proves that the so-called Queen, Elizabeth II, was fraudulently coronated on a fake coronation stone, and therefore is not the true monarch, or not the true sovereign. After the real coronation stone was removed from Westminster Abbey and her line by four Scottish nationalists in 1950. Secondly, even if she was the true sovereign, which she is not, Elizabeth II is in breach of contract and therefore has nullified her sovereignty by unlawfully giving, quote, royal assent to thousands of pieces of anti-God man-made legislation after she swore an oath upon the sovereign's Bible and kissed the Bible and signed a legally binding contract with God and the people to keep only God's laws contained in the Bible, which strictly prohibits any turning aside from God's law. Mordib has called Elizabeth as a witness and wishes to cross-examine her at his trial, which is scheduled to commence on the 9th of May this year at Southwark, it's pronounced Southwark Crown Court. It's spelt Southwark for anyone who isn't familiar with the English way of pronouncing things. It's at Southwark Crown Court in London. What I would like to ask everyone to do is to please contact your local media outlets or any media outlets you know of and ask them to please cover his trial. And I ask you to do this as well, please, Vinny. If enough people do this, this should force the mainstream media to cover this all-important and historical trial, which will in turn make it very difficult for the authorities to continue to behave dishonourably and pull any more dirty tricks, which they seem to be very good at doing at Mordib's trial.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked by Karen Quinn Testardo of United We Strike. Maybe you're familiar with her, but she said, get Mordib on your show, Vinny, because he's in real trouble and need as much coverage as conceivably possible on this issue, because it's basically like an attack on one is an attack on all. If they can do this to him for telling the truth, for exposing false flag terror, I mean, look, the United States is recognized globally as one of the most oppressive police states, right? But even they haven't had the gall to arrest and put on trial anybody who's saying 9/11's an inside job, have they?
No. You know? It seems like things are just over the top over there in the UK. With the gradual incrementalism that it has came in, the people who live there think it's perfectly normal. It's only when you come in from outside, that it's a shock to the system. Like the way we came in, I was personally astounded at the acquiescence of people there. They're just, it's just the way it is, and that's how it happens. It's the Fabian incrementalism of bringing things on. It's just one, the drip, drip, drip effect of one more piece of legislation and another, plus all the programming that happens to people's minds on the TV shows, like Coronation Street and all the rest of it, which is always, programming people on the way to think and how to deal with certain issues.
Well, there's like this word. There's like this word association. It's like if you say the words "inside job," "fluoride," or "reptilian." Things that are like very, very loosely related, if related at all. People instantly come to that one conclusion: conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're branded. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and they didn't need something red-hot sitting in a fire in order to brand us. They just need a television set in everybody's home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the most powerful mind control device ever invented.
That's quite fantastic. You know, wouldn't it be great if you could reprogram people using the same brainwashing mechanisms? Like, what if mainstream media showed 7/7 ripple effect on the day of Muad'Dib's trial, or a day before?
Yeah, well, that would be brilliant. But the chances of that happening is next to zero. But yeah, this is why I'm saying, if everyone contacts the media and says, look, I've heard about this trial happening of this man, and I want to know more about it. There should be hundreds of reporters, if not thousands of reporters in London in this time that are probably, they'd probably like to pick up some extra story while they're there. So, it's the ideal time to strike and make a big push to get, some real coverage of Muad'Dib's trial.
My producer's just saying that the UK's basically out of control. Interesting to note that the royal wedding yesterday was exactly at the same day and time as Hitler's wedding to Eva von Braun, which was 66 years ago today.
Yeah, nothing is coincidence, is there?
They love their numerology, don't they? And I think it was the Madrid bombing or something like that was like 911 days after 9/11. And it's just,
there's a whole... It goes on and on.
It's a never-ending rabbit hole, and so many people just say, I'm not going to go down it. There's too much to learn. It's too hard. I'm quite happy bouncing along on my cushioned bubble of ignorance. And if I get sent to a camp, so be it.
Yeah. Well, it's people are sleepwalking, and they need to wake up and realize and smell the roses, because otherwise they will end up in a camp, exactly as you say, or if they're not killed in the meantime by all the poisons that are coming, being inflicted on us, and these natural disasters and everything that's happening now.
Indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest, Kiwi collaborator for today, is Matthew, coming at us live from New Zealand. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there, and we'll be right back after the break.
Around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are a-changing. Critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide, broadcasting live from the future, from the island-chained nation of New Zealand, where my Kiwi collaborator for today, Matthew, joins us now. Matthew, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinnie. Yeah, it's a fitting song you were playing by Bob Dylan about the time, because this is a very crucial time for all of us, coming back to what we were talking about. Especially with Muad'Dib's trial, which is happening on the 9th of May in London. Because if Muad'Dib proves that the Crown has no authority to bring charges against him at his trial, it then means, by extension, the entire Crown criminal syndicate, the corrupt system, and their totally evil plans to exterminate, depopulate, and totally enslaves the world can be peacefully halted in its tracks and defeated. So, yeah, this is why I'm asking for a timely exertion of pressure on the media, you know, asking them to cover this trial, which involves the so-called royal family. And so, yeah, it's exactly what we need right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about basically a society that, Timmy was saying in the chat room there, that Brits love to be downtrodden, and I think maybe we all do. Maybe we've got this kind of this human psychological complex, what I like to call psychological castration, where we love, can't say that enough, to be slaves to a certain extent. And without question, when we look at our society, when we look at how bad things just seem to be commonplace, and more often than not, we get sort of a bit, I don't know, freaked out about it, frightened, or something along those lines, but don't stand up against it. And this is wrong. This is the wrong thing to do. If you are being suppressed, there is only one option. It's the same option that everybody else has had to face, regardless of whether or not they wanted to, throughout history. It's resistance. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't just sit there and moan about it. You have to actually stand up and do something about it. People love to talk about the problems of the world over their, you know, their dinner. But yeah, you know, when the dinner's finished, so the conversation finishes and people just carry on with their, you know, life is normal. And yeah, you know, that has to change. People have to stand up and do something rather than just sit there and talk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been saying for a long time, ironic as that sounds, that we need to quit with the gander and get with the proper and undermine all the propaganda. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The frustration for me, and I'm pretty sure everybody else agrees with me, is that we don't have the same sort of broadcast mediums or propaganda machines to amplify our voices inordinately, much like mainstream media does. So, therefore, those channels are not open to us. We have small things like there's plenty of patriots out there who've got radio shows, small television shows, internet websites, and things of that nature that they use to help get the word out. And incidentally, they seem to be growing in popularity exponentially, which is a very positive sign. So what we are looking
good.
So you know, let's not forget that things are getting much better and worse at the same time. It's not all doom and gloom. It's about 90% doom and about 10% happiness. But that 10% happiness is growing, you know, goodness knows, it may wind up being 90-10 in the other direction if we actually do something about it. And when I say we, I mean you, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's listening to the show. It is your responsibility. As soon as you hear about this and you don't act, then you automatically become culpable. That's why people don't want to hear the information in the first place, because they're afraid of what responsibility it might burden them with.
Yeah, that's dead right, Vinny. Yeah, as you say, the darker it gets, the more people will seek the light, and it is getting darker and darker, as we can all see, and there are more people seeking the light, which is terrific. It does come to that tipping point in people's lives where enough is enough, and they start actually feeling obliged to do something about it. And yeah, it's great that people are waking up and more and more, and this is happening.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that even if you've been conditioned to accept the New World Order your entire life, you can still wake up and wake up easily. I'd like to thank you very much, Matthew, for coming on the show today. And just before we wrap up, I'd like it if you could just put out your websites.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Vinny. For details about how Elizabeth is fraudulently crowned upon a fake coronation stone and how she has been breaking her coronation oath repeatedly for over the past 60 years, please go to jartruth.net. That's http://jahtruth.net. And okay. Click on the link to the Stone of Destiny Leofail page. And also look for the page.
Unfortunately, we're kind of out of time here. So if you want to send those links through to me on email, Matthew, I will put them up on our website. Ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com, please re-listen to this broadcast and get it out to everybody. Back next segment with the fastest 2 hours of talk radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And it's just like, man, the UK, it's utterly controlled. Incidentally, by our Germans. It's the thing. I wanted to have somebody on the show who knows a lot of the history about the royals, because I don't know too much. Not too much. I mean, there's the fact that they come from the Saxe-Coburg family, which are Germans, are basically usurpers of the crown way back in the day during the American Revolution, apparently. And only just recent history has had them dubbed as the Windsors. So basically, they're just a pack of fraudulent scumbags who have all the money in the world, but not all of the money in the world, but all that they could possibly need, and yet still they want more, which is why, incidentally, during the freezing cold winter that the UK had just up until recently, they had a special grant from the poor people of the UK who couldn't afford to pay their gas bills because the petrol prices were going up too much and all of that kind of stuff. And the royals, in their infinite complacency, decided it would be a grand idea to swindle some money out of the government so that they could heat their palaces, plural. Goodness knows, they got like something like 100 palaces plus. And it's really expensive to heat on 100 palaces. I assure you, it'd be really expensive to heat just one. And everybody else found it difficult to just heat their hands. And these people were frickin' stealing money off them. And indeed, they were actually taking money from a fund that was meant for the poorest and the most destitute of the people of the UK. Okay? These people are evil. Get it through your heads, you flag-waving retards. They are evil scum. They wish you were dead. Except that they want all the possible money that you'll ever make over your lifetime to go and fill up their coffers. You know, it's the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of everybody else's money. That's what Maggie Thatcher said. And it seems to me that in this time of great deceit and terrifying ordeals faced by humanity, that particular scum, like the royal wedding, just need a bit more attention focused on them in the negative spectrum. And I don't mean to be negative. In fact, I'm just being positive about the situation because, hey, positivity is all we got because the rest of it's been stolen by the royals. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
Stuart A. Swordbug.
And I'm Janet Diane Moyes Swordbug.
For expansions.com, and welcome to our April 27th podcast. And we have a very special show for you today with an amazing band that we're going to introduce to you. But what's also special about today's show is that we have a dual venture with our host, Vincent Eastwood in Auckland, New Zealand. So welcome, Vincent.
Welcome, everybody. Broadcasting live from the fabulous, facilitated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, and the slave South Pacific Island nation. It's very exciting to be here. and I can't believe it. Now, getting on to the band, Stuart. I've not heard this band before, but what I've heard so far, I do like.
Band is called The Art of Dying, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then they're going to play a song for you. So, here's The Art of Dying.
Hey, everyone. I'm Tavis.
Hey, Kale.
And soon our singer Johnny will be here.
He will suddenly materialize.
Hi, Johnny.
Thank you. sure you understand how much time we try to do the best I can.
How did you like that, Vincent?
It was soothing, it was grooving, it made me feel like there was oxygen coursing in my blood again. And it was very, very good.
I want to show the audience their CD, and perhaps we can give a little, ask them about this, okay? This is The Art of Dying, Vices and Virtues. Excellent music, excellent.
So let's introduce the members of the band. Why don't we start with Tavis?
Yeah, I'm Tavis, Marta Dyne.
Johnny Edwardson.
Kayla Jordy.
And we have three more over here on this side.
Greg Bradley.
Jeff.
So why don't we start with how did the band get formed? Whose idea was it and how did it get together?
You know what's funny? Greg and I started playing music together and met Jeff. We're from the West Coast in Vancouver, Canada, and Jeff grew up in Ontario and knew these cats from his childhood, and he was kind of the conduit that brought us all into playing music together, and we basically decided we were going to do that, met for our first show in the middle of Canada, and struck our first chord on stage together. Yeah, it was magic.
And about how many years ago was this?
It's about 4 years ago. Yeah.
And so this time you're on the road for the first time, or have you done this before?
We've done it a few times before. This is the first tour we've done since we released the Mary label record, you know. Mm-hmm. But Mercy just came out March 22nd. Mm-hmm. So we've been out for about a month on the Avalanche tour supporting that. And we're probably going to stay up for a couple of years too.
Excellent.
How's the response from people when you're going out and playing? I mean, is it like a nice, relaxed sort of atmosphere, or are people really going wild?
I'd say it's, yeah, when we play live, it's a pretty wild rock show. We like doing the acoustic stuff, and we do that as well. We do that at radio a lot, but the concerts are pretty rocking.
There's some mosh pits and grass.
Right?
It's pretty intense.
We do that here, like, daily.
That's what we do at our seminars. It makes them fun. That's why everybody comes from all over the world.
Yeah. I'm just wanting to see Stuart do a stage dive.
I told you to pay extra for that.
You know, one thing that just amazes me about this group was that some of the things that we talk about is I see leadership, I see perseverance, I see people out there with ideals working to change the world. And I know I read some of your bios, and I know you were out on the street corner for a while, because we hear so often these days that people give up. Look at these guys. I mean, they have been out there working, and they're getting themselves somewhere, and they're not complaining, and their tour is like, their schedule is wild. So it's amazing to see people like this who worked hard, succeeding, doing what it is that their dream is, fulfilling it. Regardless of how challenging it is, they go for it.
You basically just described why we're called Art of Dying. That's our whole mission statement is, you know, realizing that life is precious and that we're not going to be here forever. And, you know, our time here is completely precious. So that's, we live with a lot of enthusiasm and you're right. It's just everything you dream of can be possible if you just keep going.
But how long have you worked on your dream?
Oh, about 25 years.
There you go. Your whole life. So you didn't just think like one day I'm going to be a rock star and then work on it for 2 or 3 months or a year or whatever. You guys kept going, right?
Like, we all knew that this was all we wanted to do, you know, at a young age. So we dedicated our lives to it. You know, we tried to spread that to other people, and most of our songs have a sort of a message of hope underneath, and we try to give, you know, give a bit of a positive vibe.
And how many people told you, no, you couldn't do it?
Quite a few.
There you go, but you don't have to persevere, right?
I experienced in school when I was growing up, I was in grade, you know, 7 or whatever, and my guidance counselor basically said, what do you want to do? And, you know, one-on-one meeting, big meeting for a kid. And I was like, I'm going to want to sing in a band. He's like, oh, that's fantastic. Now, if that doesn't work out, what are you going to do? And I said, oh, I don't even want to put any energy into thinking about it's not going to work. I'm just going to put all my energy into singing. And he said, listen, that's great. You're from a small town in the prairies. You know, the chances of you actually getting anywhere with music is very, very slim. So you need a fallback plan, or a, what do you call that? A backup plan. Mm-hmm. And I just said, I don't think you're listening. I'm going to do this no matter what. I'm not going to put 1 ounce of energy into thinking the other way. And I had to end the meeting. I had to be like, I'm sorry, we can't talk anymore about this because I'm not going over to your side.
Good for you.
Have your girl call my girl.
Yeah. I'm going to go eat my cheese lunch sandwich in the recess break.
People with personal power.
What they're really talking about in the guidance counselor thing when they talk about a fallback plan is they're talking about a stand-down plan. It's like, hey, this person's standing up for themselves and actually going to make something happen. Let's discourage them.
Absolutely.
Have a wondering where they sort of fit in the world and what their gift is. And I find so many people, they wait really, really long time before they either figure it out or do something about it. Why did you straight from the get-go just say, no, this is what I want to be and I'm going to do it?
I think, honestly, it's a calling. You listen, you receive the message, and you know. And I have friends that don't know what they want to do with their lives, and it's so hard for me to empathize because I feel so fortunate that I actually knew what to do and knew that I had the strength to do it. So it's, you know, I think that's the most important thing in life, is to try and figure that out if you don't know already and go for it.
I kind of think what you said earlier, true, happens to a lot of people. He grew up, right away he knew what he wanted to be, a singer in a rock band. Well, most parents, most guidance counselors, school teachers, traditional institutions are going to discourage that. And I think if people could go back and, like, say, under the age of 5 and think what their dream was, I think they do know. It's just they've all gotten muddled up through what society does to them.
It's a really good point.
Yeah, I have so many friends that, as a kid, as musicians, that all wanted the same thing, too, but they didn't have the support. And my parents, you know, thankfully for me, were always behind me and said, yeah, you want to do this, we'll help you. But yeah, if you don't have some support with that, it's really tough.
Sure. Because
you'll just buy into it and drop them.
Who writes the words and the music to these this album?
We all do. Johnny writes most of the lyrics.
So it's all original.
Yeah. Yeah.
All original, for sure.
Yeah.
And where can people get this CD?
If you're in North America, you can get it in any store. iTunes is the best place. And if you're not in North America right now, it's coming soon, or you can order it off our website, artofdyingmusic.com. There's a store button or whatever. You can order it internationally.
So where are you off to from here?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Wow, you made it big time.
Yeah.
Grand Rapids. They begged me to go with them and sing with the band, and I just can't do it. And so I told them, you know, they're on your own after this.
Well, we can afford it, instead.
I'm sure you'll be popular anyway. But I understand you're going to go to New York City after that.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
That's oh, man.
I think literally right at the beginning, we walked off stage, load the trailer, and drive to the big guy.
Yeah, right. Now, did you tell me you have a photo shoot going on in Times Square?
Yeah, we had a photo shoot that night and then the gigs next day.
All right, so we're going to see you guys all over the place.
Yeah.
Right? We whip and by here.
We always try to squeeze in more things than we possibly should.
Yeah, I have to like Janet Stewart, who, you know, security, getting them out of here. That was timeless thing, what will happen in the future. We'll deal with that when the time comes.
But I think it's important to understand these are people in their own personal power. And it's like, let's look at them and let's use them as role models, that these are people with qualities that each person has within themselves that you have to be able to bring out. And again, I'm going to say, don't let society close you down. Move into your potential. Do what you came here to do. Don't let anybody tell you no. And if you remember my Magnify Your Mind issue that I just did on leadership, that's what I was talking about. Where there is no path, you create one. If people tell you no, you turn it into yes. These are people who are examples of this. So listen to your own inner self and do what it is that you want to do. Follow that dream. Make it happen.
As we say in Canada, just give her.
And that's why Canada is a superpower, by the way. Thank you.
Well, all their power people are down here.
I'm pretty sure that's how the last Canadian election was won.
Whatever.
I'm going to give her.
I like that. Yeah. No one knows what it means, but it works in Canada.
And we laugh. It makes them happy. They write better lyrics out.
What's the most difficult part? Is it keeping the band together, just doing the touring, the practicing, or what's the most challenging aspect of being a musician today for you?
Driving overnight.
You're great right now.
I don't think we have any problems keeping the band together or anything like that. One of the best things about this band is we all get along really well. And we just have lots of fun doing what we're doing. So, you know, I wouldn't say anything is overly challenging. It's busy, long days, long drives. And, you know, playing 45 minutes every night, there's another 23 hours that go into getting that time on stage, you know. And no complaints, it's all good, but it is a lot of work.
Yeah. It's funny, when you ask the question, what's the most difficult thing, I couldn't come up with anything in my head. I can't think of anything that's really difficult.
Yeah, I'm very nailed at the drives, but even that's
that's the hardest thing you do. You can't complain. I mean, that's the beauty of being able to do what you love to do and the magic of putting yourself in that position is there's really nothing that's challenging. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like your dream, you know, so it's such a magical feeling.
And you're driving to have fun. I mean, what you do, you love. Like you said, it's like you're driving somewhere and you go, oh my gosh, what am I going to do when I get there? Yeah. It's like you're driving to have, you're going someplace fun.
Yeah, I used to work a job in the daytime and I didn't like to drive to that job, but I like to drive to this job.
It's less like driving, more like flying a magic carpet.
Listen, did you have another question?
I was just going to say, it's an entirely different level from, say, having to do the extra long shift at Walmart from just doing an extra long drive to your next absolutely awesome gig where everybody's going to have an effing good time.
And they're screaming, they love them. I mean, who doesn't want to go where people are supporting them? Their career is supporting them. Their fans are supporting them. You know, everything is supporting them. So they have great mind patterns to draw that to themselves.
Just a side question. Have any girls thrown their panties up on stage?
I reminded them when they arrived.
I had to quick wrap a towel around him before the neighbors complained.
Those were panties. Well, we want to thank all the fans for checking us out, obviously.
Yeah,
and
just
keep coming and checking us out. And, you know, if you ever come to one of our shows, we're out there at the merch table in the crowd every night saying hi and shaking everyone's hand. We want to meet everybody and connect with as many of you guys as we possibly can. So make sure you say hello to us.
Totally. And we spend our days on our laptops on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. So, you know, it's amazing to have those tools to meet everyone around the world. So just don't be shy. Reach out to us and it's us.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it.
Congratulations. You made it, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Crusader. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We're unable to finish playing the Swerdlow podcast with the fabulous band Art of Dying, but you can see the full interview at GorillaMedia.co.nz, the awesome Swerdlow podcast with guest co-host Vinnie Eastwood. And speaking of fabulous things, we have two of them on the line here. It's Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz, if I remember correctly, unless, of course, Len's busy with something else, Sherry.
No, he's here right
now. Hey, Len, how are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you very, very much. And how are you two going?
Very good, Vincent. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen, I just kind of wanted to announce to you the reason why we're having Len and Sherry back on the show so soon. It's not just because that they're freaking fabulous and I love them to death. It's because they've got a movie review for us. Now, I'm sure we all love movies. Brainwashing, after all, is addictive. And what we really wanted to bring them on for once a week, on just before the weekend, is so that they can give you a wee movie review of a fabulous Illuminati film that you can go see. So what's the buzz with the bees this week, guys?
Well, we spoke a little bit last week about the movie The Conspirator, which was a Robert Redford picture, and we didn't really get to go into detail about the review. I just read an in-depth review on it, and I want to read it to everybody, and then Len and I are both going to do some commentary. So what everyone knows about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln amounts to the movie trail version of the real story. The actor assassin John Wilkes Booth shoots the U.S. president in a theater box, leaps to the stage, and declares sic semper tyrannis before making his escape stage right to his waiting horse. The most welcome part of Robert Redford's new movie, The Conspirator, is that it fills in some of the corners and backdrop to that vignette, placing Booth as the ringleader of a group of rebel-sympathizing conspirators who set out to kill not only the president, but vice president and secretary of state in a virtual coup d'etat.
Now, meanwhile, they don't tell you anything about the fact that John Wilkes Booth is a high-level infiltrator, agent provocateur for literally the Illuminati operating at that time with the Freemasonry organization and was basically involved in the plot to assassinate, but that really wasn't what it was about. Robert Redford, in this case, could have done what we all thought that he might do, which is expose something significant. Robert Redford, don't forget, is supposed to be a world-leading advocate for we the people and our environment. Here he comes out perfectly timed for the Abraham Lincoln 150th anniversary murder celebration and comes out with this film Conspirator, which essentially doesn't say anything about the fact that Lincoln was about to privatize the banksters, the central bank, and issue again greenbacks. In fact, Redford could have easily put in a line or two, at most maybe 30 seconds of text or script within a two-hour movie that gave we the people some indication that he was actually going to tell us something significant or the truth. Instead, he doesn't.
And their whole objective, the Illuminati's agenda right now, is to get people to really hate the government. And in a lot of the reviews I read, it declares that Redford and screenwriter James Solomon draw parallels between post-Civil War crackdowns and the post-9/11 dismissal of individual rights, especially in Guantanamo Bay. So Guantanamo Bay, excuse me for my East Coast slang here, for the sake of national security. And what I got from the film, and I believe so did you, Len, was that there wasn't really any parallels. What they did mention was that since now we have a jury trials for people, that no longer do we have to worry about our rights. And I didn't really see the parallels in the post.
Yeah, actually, that's what the film is actually for. It's to tell us, okay, first of all, hate your U.S. government, because here it is, a military state, which we're witnessing again right now. In the film, a couple hundred years ago, during Lincoln's assassination, it was a military group that was spearheading this alleged soul assassination or group assassins who never had anything really to do with the Illuminati or the Freemasonry organizations or the plot by the banksters, Rothschild League of Bankers, of course, Rockefeller in the United States. These guys had desire to have control over the money. It was Rothschild, Mayor Amschel Bauer, Rothschild, who said, I don't care who runs the government, so long as you give me control of the central bank, I'm happy. So that's a complete truth that was completely neglected in the conspirator film by Robert Redford. And sadly, it's a gross disappointment for people who believe in Robert Redford, thinking that he's really a good guy out to tell the truth. And in fact, what he's done here, he's created an anti-American, anti-military slam dunk against the United States federal government, which fits in today to the globalist agenda to take out faith in American government. And on top of that, what he's doing is alleging that we now have a judiciary system and trial by jury as a result of this case with the conspirator and that time of the assassination of Lincoln, whereby now suddenly we have real freedom, real trial by jury. And that's, of course, not the case for anyone who knows anything about the American system of injustice and the way it's being manipulated today by the lawyers, which basically are in business to keep their own coffers in the bar. And you can't even squeal on a lawyer if you're a lawyer, because you're going to go against the old good old boy network of keeping your mouth shut as you are criminally impaling we the people.
Well, one of the parallels I did see with Guantanamo Bay was that there really was a level of just not listening to people and just doing what the military, we call monkey trials, what they wanted, no matter what the jury would say, no matter what the group of people would say. If they'd have a group of people, 9 out of 10 would vote for their innocence. It didn't matter that they would vote for their innocence. There was one agenda, and the agenda is whatever the global elitists believe in, to happen to that person for the greater good of everybody else. They call it the greater good, but in reality, it's not about justice here. It's about the greater good.
Well, it's actually not about the greater good either, really. It's about the banksters' good, and it's about providing for the agenda that's going to do the best, most profitable, and to hell with we the people, to hell with the poor victims of injustice. And that, again, is, you know, again, it's a disappointment for me, for somebody as celebrated as this producer. He has the show dance festival up in Utah, the Sundance Festival, and Robert Redford is very well known for allegedly being a crusader. Unfortunately, he had the greatest opportunity of his career with this film to do something significant, that is, expose the banksters for what they've done, and he blew it.
Yeah. He definitely.
It was like the antithesis to V for Vendetta or something along those lines. It's like, for some reason, I feel very disempowered by Hollywood. And it's mostly, in my opinion, producers. Producers are the backbone of the film industry. And they know a heck of a lot of the dodgy stuff that goes on in Hollywood behind the scenes. And they're actually told. In fact, I was chatting with Stuart Swerdlow the other day. And he said he was told point blank by producers that, yes, we put things in these scripts, and yes, the military people come in and they tell us exactly what we can and can't put in our films, you know?
Right. And absolutely. And, yeah. And, you know, it's very significant. You know, Sherry and I have been working towards trying to bring the end to division, the divisiveness between Jews, Gentiles, Christians, Muslims, black, white, gay, straight even. You know, the fact is male, female. The patriarchal society deals with dividing people and disempowering women, for example. And the reality is that these people who have advanced this agenda by globalization.
Through religion as well.
Through Hollywood. The reality is that they were taken over. If people don't understand what happened to Hollywood during the McCarthy era, go see the film or get it on YouTube. It's in 16 parts on YouTube, In Lies We Trust, the CIA, Hollywood, and Bioterrorism. Or you can see Farmer Horse, the Showtime sting of Penn & Teller that Sherry and I did. There's a segment in there that goes into detail about how the Jews of Hollywood were completely ousted by the CIA and the banksters, Rockefeller et al.
And then they actually joined them.
And then what remaining Jews were left in Hollywood joined the CIA. And so this is ultimately, if we're going to assign blame, instead of it being a Jew world order, as it's claimed in many parts of the Patriot movement, and there's a lot of people that use that leverage, that con job, to divide people instead of coming together. It's about coming together for world peace. It's not about finding more reasons to commit war and atrocities. And that, sadly, the media is the instigator, because the culture, the American culture that we all bought into, it's called Hollywoodism. Right. We've bought into the celebrities. We've bought into our heroes. And in this case, again, Sherry's work is outstanding for exposing controlled opposition. In this case, in the film Conformist, you have he's allegedly telling you the bad news and how the military's bad and how the United States injustice system doesn't work well. But in actual point of fact, Robert Redford is as controlled by the same Hollywood barons that control every other film coming out of Hollywood. And sad, you know, it's allegedly an independent film. It's allegedly done by an activist advocate for the environment and we the people, and it really falls. It's not to say it wasn't well acted. It was terrific in terms of its acting. Yeah. The cinematography was excellent. The costume designing was superb. But in terms of we the people getting the truth, and unfortunately that's what's required to set us free, it fails.
It definitely didn't hit the right mark with us. To someone outside, it would be a very controversial film to the mainstream.
So, Vince, I hope that takes care of it, and I hope you have a good weekend at the movies.
Well, it's been very, very lovely having you guys on. You can stay on for an extra segment if you'd like, if there's any breaking news. But the royal wedding is the big puppy on my mind at the moment. I was surprised that there was no spit coming off the sides of the road from people as these blue bloods marched through.
Yeah, and what do you think about, well, they're basically, they divert all the attention to the fact that Kate, the woman that Prince William is marrying, is of a common person, is not of royalty blood. And so that's really where their focus is, where they put the attention to all the people. So everybody's looking at it as this fairy tale wedding. Nobody's really looking at who the Queen of England really is and what the royalty really stands for.
Well, there was a comment by one of the royal pages or whatever his name is, I forget, but he said, well, it's very unusual for her to be marrying a commoner like this, because she doesn't have the breeding. And I don't mean that in a snooty way.
Exactly. It's all the diversion of it. It's like, oh, wow. It gives every young girl in the world, oh, I might marry a prince someday. And nobody really looks and cares at who these people really are and what they stand for and how evil they really are.
It reminds me of that Tyler Durden speech from Fight Club. You know, we've all been raised on television to believe that one day we'd all be movie gods and rock stars and millionaires, but we won't. And we're slowly learning that fact, and we're very, very pissed off.
Very true. Very true. You know, I think that we have the opportunity to free ourselves from this slavery, and then we stand a chance. But until we have the opportunity to even have our own banks, you know, have instead of the central banks controlled by the banksters, because everything's money. The entire injustice system is operating from payoffs, and this type of sad reality is what blocks we the people from advancing, you know, completely in the ways that the Creator had intended us to advance, creatively, productively, and lovingly.
You know what? Another interesting thing right now for us to look at this whole real wedding is going on, what else is going on in the news? Because I'm sure that it was definitely placed at the best time for these people to be doing all their other evil dealings.
Well, it's always distraction and deception and illusions that we, you know, we fall victim to. And that's what the meat is about.
But that's acting under the assumption that the wedding itself isn't a very evil thing anyway. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, my very special guests are Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz. And we'll be right back after the break for the final segment.
Is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me, it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
That's what it is. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about a little bit of history repeating. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Final segment. The week is almost over. And those of you who are regular listeners of the show, take a break. Now, my very special guests are Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz. And we're talking about the royal wedding. And the institution of marriage itself is one thing that we wanted to divulge into quite a lot here on the show and this final segment that we have left. So, Len, Sherry, take it away.
Well, Len and I both believe the institution of marriage was it's a contract, and people have
fallen
into
that. It's not a con job.
It's a con job and a contract.
You know, the sad reality is if you look back in history at how the institution itself evolved. Now, I'm not going to say that there shouldn't be monogamy in a relationship. It's everything from health-wise, it's obvious based on the science that it's healthier to be with one individual and not mess around a lot. So, I mean, you could say that that's all true. Also, from a spiritual point of view, when you engage in multiple relationships, you're taking on other people's energy, other people's spirit, other people's baggage, other people's disharmonies, etc. That's not particularly healthy. It's not particularly conscious to evolve into somebody that is open and capable of really having a deep love if you're messing around with all these different people. So I'm an advocate for monogamy, but this institution itself of marriage, people don't even realize. Most people have no clue. The Royal Family of England instituted it because they were afraid that if they didn't, the amount of illegitimate children that came from single mom and single dads, and the dads typically left the households and leaving the poor women to be single moms and then dependent on the royalty for handouts. Apparently, that's the origin where we got the institution of marriage contract. Acts whereby instead of going to God and instead of engaging in, you know, primarily a contract with the person or the family that you're marrying into or marrying with, that now you have to go to the state for licensure. You have to go get blood tests to see if there's compatibility. And there's just a lot of weird stuff happening that this wedding in England is actually really on top of. And it's just an interesting note.
But it also has a lot of things, parts of the Bible that speak about marriage. And religion takes a big part in the way people, they'll judge you. If you're living together and you're not married, people will judge you. And they're also afraid of judgment from other people as well because of what's written in the religions as far as you should not be, you know, messing around or living with somebody out of wedlock. And so a lot of it derives from religious, and where was religion created? Who created these ideas? So we could go back 2,000 years and say this is where it was created.
Yeah. Again, it's a time period right now where as the economy fails, as a lot of people have to judge what did they invest in? What are our lives invested in? And particularly, what is the culture, the Hollywood mentality, like we spoke of a few minutes ago? Where did we get our core beliefs? How did we form these. And this concept of the institution of marriage itself, you know, it's not so much even just religion, it's political and economic.
It's also church, it's church and state, the idea of church and state. Why can't somebody go in front of somebody who can actually marry them and it doesn't have to be a state licensing kind of thing?
Well,
why
that's
can't
exactly
they just
right.
exchange rings and say, okay, I give my
and
heart
commitments,
to you?
Absolutely. And that's under God, that's essentially the main contract and the justice karmic determiner is the fact that we're sovereigns. We're all sovereigns. We're as powerful in terms of our sovereignty as the royalty. So why is it, you know, that this issue of marrying a commoner versus a royal, you know, why is it in the press right now? Again, it's like 80% truth. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, a half truth being a complete lie, that you've got to have the whole picture. It's just like the film The Conformist. If you don't have the whole picture, you don't know John Wilkes Booth was part of the Illuminati, part of the Freemasonry organization. And in the film, they didn't even show you what happened to him. He got away. Well, according to the historians, he was extradited to Europe and lived happily ever after. The reality is that when we engage in marriage and contract with the state, if you notice, and everybody that's been through marriage and divorce can tell you this, it's really easy to get married. It's really hard to get divorced. And what made it so, again, is you've got the religious condemnation and that kind of mentality and the belief system. And then you've got the political arm of the Illuminati, which is controlling our statutory laws and requirements for blood testing prior to getting married, all these marriage licensing issues. They make it a legal, political, and religious matter instead of a sovereign matter.
Well, the thing is, if you want to bind yourself to somebody, there's nothing to stop you. You can just swear an oath or whatever, and then you're married. And that's basically what I was having a conversation with some people the other day, because I'm going to get married to my girlfriend at the end of this year, Lord willing. And I didn't want to get those marriage contracts or any of that other kind of stuff, because that involves the state in my relationship. And you know me, guys. I don't like being involved with the state very much.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show today, guys. Fire out.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And what's your website there? SherryKane.com and Google Len Horowitz, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure you'll find them. This concludes another week of the fabulous Vinnie Eastwood Show, even if I do say so myself. And it's made only fabulous, not by me, but by the marvelous guests that we have on. You know, two examples right here. And next week, we have quite a nice lineup. Indeed, we've got an MC, Genocide, and hopefully we'll be having some other people as well, including our newest contributor to Guerrilla Media, Skyway. And, of course, on Friday next week, we'll have Sherry and Len back for another movie review.